You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
Good afternoon. People who write asking me for a trustworthy book of facts about popular songs and the people who wrote them don't have any idea how complicated the whole thing can be. Suppose, for instance, you are researching a song and you have in your possession, shall we say, two impeccable sources of information, or at least two which have all the appearance of being impeccable. You do your research and what do you find? That one contradicts the other, not just in some small detail, but flatly, bluntly. So who's right? Nobody can ever be sure. I'll come to that particular nest of bees in a moment, but first a different kind of problem which only arises when whole dynasties start writing songs. There are, for instance, several Freeds, all interrelated, who wrote good popular songs, and it can sometimes be the work of a rainy afternoon trying to figure out how it can be that either Arthur Freed was his own grandmother or that his brother-in-law put lyrics to his uncle. An even worse mix-up pertains to the Tobias family. And having climbed up that family tree once before in this program and had to be rescued by the fire brigade, I won't attempt it again. But to convey some idea of the problem, remember that on record labels, when they print the name of the songwriters after the title of the piece, they never bother with initials. So what you often get is Tobias and Tobias, or even Tobias, Tobias and Tobias. Actually, it is theoretically possible that somewhere there is a song written by Tobias, Tobias, Tobias and Tobias. And what makes it worse is that all of them seem to have written words and music. So there's no telling who did what. There was also a Tobias girl, but she clarified matters somewhat by getting married and turning into Mrs. Eddie Cantor. But just see what a mess the researcher can get into examining the innocent statement that August the 15th is Tobias' birthday. Charles Tobias was born on that day in 1898. Go to the dictionaries and it says Charles Tobias, husband of Edna Tobias, father of Fred Tobias, brother of Henry Tobias, brother of Harry Tobias. Well, here's an example of a song by C. Tobias and H. Tobias and H. Tobias.
Think of me, lonely me, thinking of you, and trying to smile away all of my tears. But by and by, you and I, we'll start anew. We'll know again those happy years. 'Cause I miss you since you went away, dear. Miss you more than I can say, dear. Daytime, nighttime, nothing I do can make me forget the way that I still love you. Kiss you. In my dreams I kiss you. Whispering, oh darling, how I miss you. Tell me, do you ever miss me? Oh Lord, as I miss you. Darling, how I miss you. Well, tell me, do you ever miss me? As I miss you.
Dinah Washington singing Miss You, which was written, although nobody quite knows how, by Charlie and Henry and Harry Tobias. All three men are described in their biographies as composers and authors, so the division of labour will have to remain a mystery for all time. But the situation gets much mistier when the books flatly contradict each other, as they do in this next instance. Now, I've talked before about the sad case of Karl Hoschner, who came from a place in Czechoslovakia called Kuschwarda, and every time he gave his name and address, people used to say Gesundheit. He entered the Vienna Conservatory and won an oboe scholarship. You remember, he was the one who thought that the vibrations of the oboe reed were driving him sane. So he left the Victor Herbert Orchestra. By this time, of course, he'd arrived in New York. And he started writing songs with great success. In 1908, he wrote the tunes for a show called The Three Twins. And I think we'd better not even think about the plot of that one. The score is interesting for two reasons. First, it had, purely by accident, two songs with titles later to be made famous by quite different writers, Over There and Goodnight, Sweetheart. But it also had that sentimental declaration of love with the daftest rhyme of the epoch. The words were by Otto Habeck, whose years as a professor of English had evidently left him with a kind of word blindness. How else can we explain one of his rhymes for the word cozy?
Cuddle up a little closer, baby mine. Cuddle up and be my little clinging vine. Like to feel your cheek so rosy, like to make you comfy, cozy, 'cause I love from head to toesy, baby mine. Cheek so rosy, like to make you comfy, cozy, 'cause I love from head to toesy.
The one song of Karl Hoschner which has survived nearly 80 years, and that's quite a feat, especially the part of the feat which refers in the lyric to Tozy. Cuddle Up a Little Closer is one of those songs that seems to revive itself once every generation. My own, for instance, was introduced to it in a 1943 Betty Grable picture called Coney Island. Now for the Hoschner contradictions. In 1910, he did the score for a new show called Madame Sherry. I've not been able to find out what it was about, but whatever it was about, it certainly changed Hoschner's circumstances dramatically. They buried him. And even as they were burying him, Americans were singing along to his big song from Madame Sherry. Now, I had been familiar with this song from another life, as it were, from a quite different direction. My father was a great supporter of the old music hall. He used to describe to me what he'd seen and heard there when I was still in single figures, and he even took me to one or two surviving palaces of varieties for which I shall always be eternally grateful. Because of that tutelage, I knew this next song coming up before I was in the long pants, and always assumed it was an English song. Why, the lyric even referred to the West End. On my recordings of it, the composers are listed as Moore and Olive. It's an HMV EP, and I'm afraid those names are quite wrong. The song, in fact, was written by our friend Hoschner and Otto Harbeck. Is the song a bit risque for the times? Not really. The song might have come from Broadway, but it was tailor-made for the English Music Hall. The recording is crackly, but it's worth straining for because this is history we're listening to.
Every little movement has a meaning all its own. Every thought and feeling by some posture can be shown. And every love thought that comes a-stealing o'er your being must be revealing all its sweetness in some appealing little gesture all its own.
Every little movement has a meaning of its own, a statement as true now as it was back in 1912 when the great Murray Lloyd first recorded it. You only hear the song these days in self-conscious revivals of the old music hall, but it seems likely that its attachment to the reputation of Murray Lloyd will keep it alive. So they really ought to get the composer's name right, even if it does sound like a sneeze. By a coincidence, old Hoschner is not the only one connected with the song to have an anniversary. The lyricist too can make a claim. Otto Habels Harbeck had an extraordinary career. Bachelor of Arts, Master of Arts, Doctor of Letters, author of Up in Mabel's Room. And guess which of those credits carries the most cultural weight? Harbeck went into the musical theatre and created a record never likely to be surpassed when he concocted a seven-time rhyme with When I'm Calling You, Who, 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 Who. All through his career, he seems to have alternated between the kind of sub-Ruritanian junk which expresses itself in titles like One Flower Alone Grows in Your Garden and then verses which deservedly became American classics. He was associated for a long time with Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein, writing in tandem with Oscar to achieve some odd results at times. What was truly astonishing about him was the range of style he mastered. It seems almost impossible to believe that the same man who wrote that song that Murray Lloyd loved so much should also have delighted Fred Astaire.
I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, madam, with you. My heart won't let my feet do things they should do. Say, you know what? You're lovely. You know what? You're lovely. But oh, what you do to me. I'm like an ocean wave that's bumped on the shore. I feel so absolutely stumped on the floor. When you dance, you're charming and you're gentle. Especially when you do the continental. But this feeling isn't purely mental. For heaven rest us, I'm not asbestos. And that's why I won't dance. Why should I? I won't dance. How could I? I won't dance. Merci beaucoup. I know that music leads the way to romance. So if I hold you in my arms, I won't dance. Especially when you do that continental. But this feeling isn't purely mental. For heaven rest us, I'm not asbestos. And that's why I won't dance. Why should I? I won't dance. How could I? I won't dance. Merci beaucoup. I know that music leads the way to romance. So if I hold you in my arms, I won't dance.
Fred Astaire, accompanied by Oscar Peterson and company, with I Won't Dance. Jerome Kern wrote that one with Harbeck as the title song of a Fred and Ginger picture, which eventually came out under the banner of Swing Time. And here again, tantalizing glimpses of songs we were never allowed to hear. Apparently one of the tunes was left half on the cutting room floor. They played the tune, but dropped the lyrics. The title was It's Not in the Cards, and that ought to go on the wanted list, along with You're the Cause, the Berlin song that was dropped from Top Hat at the last minute. And before we go any further, a defensive move from me. The ASCAP dictionary lists Otto Harbeck as co-author of I Won't Dance, which was not in the picture Swing Time, even though Swing Time was originally to be called I Won't Dance. The song comes from an earlier Fred and Ginger picture, the one in which Ginger was called Sherwenka. And all I can be sure of is that the picture was called Roberta. Harbeck wrote Smoke Gets in Your Eyes for it, but according to some reference books, I Won't Dance was the work of Oscar Hammerstein for the Broadway production, with a new screen version added by Dorothy Fields. And then there was Lovely to Look At, which had words by Dorothy Fields and Jimmy McHugh, who was really a composer. But the oddest item of all concerns the Firebrand song, I'll Be Hard to Handle. That one had words by Bernard Dougal. Bernard who? Exactly. Maybe the weirdest anecdote in the entire history of Fred and Ginger. It seems that what happened was that Harbeck, involved in the plot-making, came to Kern one day with a story about a nephew of his who wanted to get into the musical theatre. Now, the world is congested with nephews who want to get into the musical theatre, and I think the only sensible thing to do with them is to fob them off on your auntie, especially where Kern was concerned. That fire-eater was in the habit of standing on the balcony of his Beverly Hills hotel and making ranting speeches with the deliberate aim of stopping the traffic. How, in these circumstances, Harbeck had the gall to come to Kern with tales of consanguinity, I can't imagine. But the really amazing thing is Kern's reaction. Instead of chucking Harbeck over the balcony and making a speech about that, Kern gave him a new tune he'd just completed and told him the nephew could try his luck on it. The nephew, Bernard Dougal, duly went away and returned with this next song. And most astonishing of all, a really good lyric.
Now we'll stay till something do us part. That old dad of mine ain't got a heart. Any girl who's out for pleasure thinks of marriage only at her leisure. As it is, they've got the horse behind the cart. When my pop said we must wed, he kind of wowed me. Still, I'm ready. But one thing must be clear at the start. I'll be hard to handle, I promise you that. And if you complain, here's one little Jane who'll leave you flat. I'll be hard to handle, what else can I be? I say with a shrug, I think you're a mug to marry me. When you first threw I was willing to philander, but I never thought I'd have to be a bride. Now you're gonna find tough sledding. I don't want no shotgun wedding. I was only along for the ride. I'll be hard to handle, I'm telling you plain. Just be a dear and scram out of here. I'm gonna raise Cain. I'll be hard to handle, my bridges are burned. This wedding's a gag, and you're in the bag where I'm concerned. I'll be hard to handle when we've said I do. See, there's no hope, I just got a dope when I took you. I'll be living my life in bed, but they always will be twin beds. And I warn you, you'll be living like a mom. Our affair is now a past one, so don't think you've pulled a fast one. Just remember, I think you're a punk. I'll be hard to handle, I'm no ball and chain. I'll find some means to call the Marines. I'm gonna raise Cain.
People often write asking me to explain the mystery of the One Song Man. There is no explanation, but that case surely ranks as the oddest. The nephew of the librettist rose himself in on a song for a Fred and Ginger picture, improbably comes through with flying colours, and then, as far as I've been able to ascertain, absolutely nothing. Well, Otto Harbeck went on churning them out for the rest of his life. And before we leave him and the movie Roberta, here's a brief song in the score, one which rather got forgotten in the stampede for Smoke It's In Your Eyes, Yesterday's, and I Won't Dance. And here it is.
Before I met you, no one attracted me. No love thoughts worried or distracted me. My disposition kept exempting me until you started in preempting me. And all this while you've really been tempting me. Maybe you can tell me what we ought to do. Now that you've got me going, what you gonna do? Is it up to me? Is it up to you? What kind of game is this we've begun? Was it done just for fun? We have knit till I'm wrecked. Won't you tell me what you expect? Is this to be a case of kiss and never tell? Folly and farewell, heaven or maybe hell. Which is it going to be, love or gin? Wife or sin? Let's begin. We have met till I'm wrecked. Won't you tell me what you expect? Is this to be a case of kiss and never tell? Folly and farewell, heaven or maybe hell. Which is it going to be, love or gin? Wife or sin? Let's be.
Let's Begin, written by Jerome Kern and Otto Harbeck, who started out in low university dives but later rose to something more respectable in Tin Pan Alley. Someone else with an anniversary this week is one of the most unusual figures in the songwriting annals, a man whose training was classical and whose output was oddly divided between works in that style, popular songs, and persistent belittlements of himself. The man was Oscar Levant, and you can get a measure of the flavour of his self-denigration from the titles of two of his books, A Smattering of Ignorance and Memoirs of an Amnesiac. A Smattering of Ignorance contains the famous confessional My Life, or The Story of George Gershwin. Also, his remarks about the movie moguls, including, Daryl F. Zanuck is a man who knows, unfortunately, what he wants. Levant also swears that when Zanuck was studying a preview of a film about Paris and was worried that the local flavour wasn't strong enough, he suggested adding a few French horns. Levant worshipped Gershwin and defined the difference between them, saying that while George was working on Porgy and Bess, he, Levant, was writing the score for Charlie Chan at the opera. What's interesting is that in the Charlie Chan film, Levant was required to write a supposedly real opera, in which the bass baritone part was sung by that distinguished operatic virtuoso, Boris Karloff. Levant later described what he'd written as a mixture of Mussorgsky and pure Levant. In 1930, Levant actually wrote a popular song, and in this snatched fragment from an old radio show, he and Crosby do what they can to wreck it completely.
Lady, play your mandolin. Lady, play your mandolin.
That was an introduction, wasn't it? Oscar, attendez pour le moment.
Lay.
Where you gonna play a vamp?
We'll play a vamp.
A vamp?
Play a vamp for about 2 or 3 hours, and then you'll
big,
come.
Big production, this yeah. thing.
Lady, play your mandolin. Lady, sing your song of sin. Though I fear you, let me hear you play. Play your mandolin.
Bing Crosby and Oscar Levant and Lady, play your dismandolin. The 1930 hit that George Gershwin had in mind when once at a party he said in a voice loud enough for the guests to hear, come on, Oscar, play us a medley of your hit. In 1934, Levant actually managed the one song that does have the sound of a standard. But before I lay it on, an example of Levant's priceless style of anecdote. One of his friends in Hollywood was David Raxin, composer of Laura. And Levant reveals how Raxin came to be in Hollywood at all. Apparently, Raxin's real profession, according to Levant, was plagiarizing Shostakovich. But he was sent for in the late 1930s by Charlie Chaplin and hired to take down on manuscript everything Chaplin whistled. He would follow the great man around, waiting for a whistle, and then put it on paper. What Levant wonders is how Chaplin could manage to whistle the harmonies. Anyway, here is Levant's best song.
You were my adored one. Then you became the bored one. And I was like a toy that brought you joy. One day, a broken toy that you preferred to throw away. If I expected love when first we kissed, blame it on my youth. If only just for you I did exist, blame it on my youth. I believed in everything like a child of three. You meant more than anything. All the world to me. If you were on my mind all night and day, on my youth. If I forgot to eat and sleep and pray, blame it on my youth. And if I cry a little bit when first I learned the truth, don't blame it on my heart, blame it on my youth.
Frank Sinatra with Oscar Levant's great moment as a songwriter, which came in 1934. Levant ends his book by saying, "If there's anyone I've forgotten to insult, I apologise." Actually, there was one exception to his insults, and in any case, much of the distaste for people was no more than a comic effect. He once said, "I generally hate people until they say hello to me." Well, one man who said hello to Levant and never managed to say goodbye was George Gershwin.
This is Oscar Levant speaking about Gershwin. Again. They said, "Just talk, Oscar. Give us Gershwin in your own words, sort of a profile, a portrait of the artist." "I'll try. It's not an easy thing to do. When you try to describe genius, you get into trouble, and you deserve it. It's a frustrating subject." "Well, there was nothing frustrated about George. There was no gap between his dream and his doing, no uncertainty. The music was there, and it came out. Naturally, easily. He was a natural. That's a rare and fine thing to be. It's pretty marvelous when you stop to think about it. It shows up in George's music." They said, "Tell us what Gershwin looked like." "That's easier. He looked angular and romantic, like this. Long, jutting jaw. Dark complexion. Don't remember the color of his eyes. Black hair straight back in an unsleek pompadour. He was always worrying about losing his hair. Not tall, not short, but he looked tall somehow. Quite a guy. A right guy. A good Joe was George. I can remember so many times, so many places, so many tunes."
Let's leave Oscar Levant deep in his reverie of George Gershwin and examine the song he was just playing there. It wasn't quite as well known as the great Gershwin standards, but then George wrote a lot of songs like that, songs which most other writers would have been excited about having written, but which in Gershwin's case got lost in the rush. Now, that lesser song we just heard comes from a show called Pardon My English, a 1933 Gershwin escapade which ended in disaster. It closed in 4 weeks, in spite of including songs like this.
"Once I visited my cousin in Milwaukee, USA. She got boyfriends by the dozen when she sang in a low-down way. She was a positive sensation. The songs that she sang would never miss. My cousin was my inspiration. That's how I got like this. I got a cousin in Milwaukee. She's got a voice so squawky. And though she's tall and kind of gawky, oh, how she gets the men. Her singing isn't operatic. It's got a lot of static. What makes your heart get acrobatic? 9 times out of 10. When she sings hot, you can't be solemn. It sends the shivers up and down your spinal column. When she sings blue, the men shout, 'What stuff? That baby is hot stuff.' So if you like the way I sing songs, if you think that I'm a wow, you can thank my squawky cousin from Milwaukee, because she taught me how." she sings hot, you can't be solemn. It sends the shivers up and down your spinal column. When she sings blue, the men shout, what stuff? That baby is hot stuff. So if you like the way I sing songs, if you think that I'm a wow, you can thank my squawky cousin from Milwaukee.
My cousin from Milwaukee, impersonated there by Ella Fitzgerald, and a reminder that even the greatest score in the world can sometimes fall in a heap if the book is too weak. Pardon My English was so bad that the leading man, Jack Buchanan, paid $20,000 to be released from his contract. And as for the producer, Vincent Friedley, he actually fled the country and didn't come back till his creditors were too busy chasing other defaulting producers. And yet, the show included this.
It's a funny thing, I look at you, I get a thrill I never knew. Isn't it a pity we never met before? Here we are at last, it's like a dream, the two of us, a perfect team. Isn't it a pity?
One of the prettiest of all Gershwin songs, Isn't It a Pity, from the 1933 flop, Pardon My English.
Imagine all the years we've wasted fishing for salmon, losing at backgammon. What joys are I'm
And that's it. See you same time next week. You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.